KBOO Portland.
And welcome to Trippy Politics Protests and
Potpourri.
I'm your host, Corey Elia, and as always, my co-host,
Leslie McLam.
Hello, and welcome to the first episode of the podcast for 2021. Also happens to be episode 21.
Kind of ironic.
Anyways, folks, I am your host, Corey. I want to apologize for the delay in this episode for the last few months.
We've been pretty busy. I know Corey has been slogged down with school, right?
Oh, yeah.
And there's been a lot going on in the country ever since we were covering the BLM protests back in the summer. Since then, there's been a rising number of counter-protests, Back the Blue, pro-Trump, self-titled patriots that are out there that are contesting the election. They're contesting pandemic restrictions like face mask wearing or outdoor dining restrictions. So these groups have been proliferating, and this is coming up to the November elections that we had, which, speaking of, Joe Biden is the winner, although there were a number of people that were contesting actual election results. They were contesting the election results in places like Georgia, and those inevitably failed.
And at this point, it has actually resulted in so many Stop the Steal rallies in so many different state capitals, not only just Washington, D.C. And a lot of those have resulted in being really violent. There was ones that I've been remembering specifically here in the Pacific Northwest, down in Salem, where they ended up breaking into the Capitol building during one of the legislations.
Yeah, I told you about that. That was something that I had been following, that Oregon Rep. Nierman allowed people into the building. This was back in December during a special legislative session down in Salem.
I believe on the 21st?
It was right in the middle of the month.
Yes.
Right. It's actually gotten a lot of attention lately. Rep. Nierman has restricted access to the Capitol building at this time. He had to give up his pass cards. He has to notify the security that he will be arriving to do business so that they have a chance to notify everyone in the Capitol. And that's because he let armed insurrectionists, pro-Trump, Back the Blue, the self-titled patriot groups, and they were allowed into the building by Rep. Nierman, and he knew they were outside. But it didn't become that big of an issue until a few weeks later, at the beginning of January, the January 6th D.C. insurrection.
Yeah, that one has been very interesting to try and follow. I myself was following on Twitter, retweeting that morning when it was all going down. There has been so much misinformation, some deliberate disinformation coming out about the whole situation.
How long were you glued to your phone, Corey? I was glued to my phone all day. I couldn't get off. I tried to put it down. I was absolutely flabbergasted on one side. And on the other side, I was unsurprised because I sort of saw this coming from the protests that we were covering in the summer when we had those counter-protesters come out against BLM. And they were saying that they were there to protect the Constitution, that all lives matter. They were there to back the blue, and they felt that the BLM supporters were inherently anti-law enforcement because they wanted reform, change, accountability, and defunding. These are things that the BLM protesters were chanting about. And Trippy is talking to Max Smith.
And this movement, it really kind of, it doesn't just get stuck on Black lives. It's not just about Black people. I mean, we understand that Black lives have to matter for all lives to matter. And what we have out here is a lot of all lives. And then again, if you want it to be Black centered, there have to be Black people out there to center around. For me, I think that my perspective is different from a lot of other people's because I didn't come into this as a journalist. I came into this as a person who regularly engages in activism whenever there's a just cause.
We're talking today on Sunday, the 30th of August. So just this morning, Trump tweeted out about sending, you know, National Guard and putting more focus on Portland. How does that make you feel as a person of color out there on the front line?
You know, I don't know how anyone else feels. You know, I sometimes speak for everyone involuntarily or voluntarily. Today, I speak for me when I just say it doesn't matter who they send at this point, you know. I think a lot of us are at the point where we feel like we shouldn't really even still be here based on some of the things that we've seen and have happened to us, or that we're on borrowed time already. So it doesn't really matter who they send. It could be anybody. It could be the Feds. It could be the Nazis. It could be the KKK. It could be the Proud Boys. Any brand of Chud. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. The sheriff, the whoever.
So yesterday, the 29th, Saturday, was one of the most intense situations I've ever seen. A rally started at Clackamas Town Center and then drove all the way down to downtown. What was some of the craziest stuff you seen yesterday?
You know, the craziest thing I actually saw yesterday was after three people got hit by cars, I realized that Lieutenant Nia and Captain Nakamura were in the car recording it on their cell phones and taunting the protest, the counter-protesters. I told you, get out of the street, get out of the street. And I recorded this, and they just continued to do it. And then when I approached them about it, they got out of their car and threatened to arrest me. You know? And while continuing to record outside of the car on their personal phone or some kind of phone that they shouldn't be recording on. You know? And it's just amazing to me that, like, they would just do that blatantly. Like, even with the Chuds yesterday in their parade, you can tell there's ones that are, like, about it and there's ones that are not. There's ones that are going to be like, yeah, 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 but they're not really ready for nothing. Like, I can snatch your flag and you're not going to do nothing. You know what I'm saying? So, and there's the guys that have guns and are going to pull a rifle on you. So you have to kind of know that a lot of them are in their own little groups and they're just out there to support, but they're not really about it. And it's like that on both sides.
But as we saw, the Patriot side became increasingly violent and aggressive. They came in the very beginning armed. Ready. They came with mace and bear spray. They came with paintball guns, and they were shooting people.
Tasers.
So you and
collapsible batons.
Oh wow.
The weaponry, they got creative too. I mean, a lot of the flagpoles that were being used for some of these flags were actually either wooden dowels, like actual wooden poles, or metal poles. And most of the time, you'd see them just strip the flag off of it, disregarding the flag, just to be able to have a pole to beat somebody with.
Yeah, I saw so much of that on January 6th. A lot of the footage that we're getting out of D.C., because I wasn't there, shows a lot of these people waving either American flags, back the blue flags, don't tread on me flags, just a variety of flags on the right-wing extremism spectrum. Not only are they waving the flags, like you said, they strip them off. They are using them as an actual weapon. These are like images that we've seen in history books of the American Revolution, where people are like trying to stab at the enemy over a hill with a flagpole, it looks like. And I'm seeing this happen on social media, and it was mind-boggling. And these people with back the blue flag, the people that they're attacking, are law enforcement officers. And it was incredible to me because a lot of investigations have been coming across the nation of police departments that have had to suspend or start looking into some of their officers being present at the
DC rally,
yeah. on the 6th.
There's been so many police officers, there's been so many military veterans, or even some it looks like that might still be active. There were several politicians that were Republicans that were in that crowd. There were so many individuals in that crowd that it was very hard for people to determine who was all present.
I mean, we're still learning that a lot of very notable people were there. Alex Jones of InfoWars, Alex Jones was seen to be there. Very notable members of the Proud Boys,
Gavin McGinnis was supposedly there. There's photos of a man that dresses like Gavin, grooms himself like Gavin, looks so much like Gavin, but Gavin McGinnis has released a statement saying that he was in New York at that time, but hasn't provided any other thing besides, oh, I was in New York. So at this point, it's hard to determine truly what's going on there. He's probably just trying to keep face.
I mean, there was a lot of people arrested. It's not just notable names. There are people that weren't a big notable name, but now are. Do you remember the images of the guy walking off with the lectern for Nancy Pelosi?
Oh yes. The one that accidentally got named by somebody as Via Getty when that picture first popped up, because it was somebody looked at it and saw that underneath the picture was Via Getty, which meant from Getty Images, but they just assumed he was like Italian or something, and just that was his name.
Right. You know, but people have been using their social media handles, and when they can't figure out who someone is, they'll often refer to that. And that mistake unfortunately happens. That's how disinformation and misinformation spreads.
Exactly.
Someone doesn't double check on that.
Yeah, that one must have been embarrassing for the individual who did it after the fact, if they even paid attention to what happened with that. I mean, there was also an individual right now that has been pretty prolific in all over the media since then, John Sullivan. He actually was here locally known as Activist John. He goes by so many different names, Jane X.
I recognize that name from the summer protests and covering, and from what I remember, we were discussing that this person didn't seem to be presenting themselves as what they really were, and that they didn't really... I'm not sure which side that they were really on. It was not obvious. It wasn't clear to anybody, and they seemed to be more there for themselves,
yeah,
in a way.
John Sullivan is an interesting individual. His protest career, if you want to call it that, started over in Utah. He's actually the brother of the Proud Boy leader from Utah, James Sullivan. They're both the adopted son of a military general. And it ended up being that he was popping in so many different like protest scenes from L.A., Seattle, New York, Washington, D.C., and people pretty much determined that, yeah, he was there trying to make a name for himself. And he got himself thrown out of there. And now all these conservative media sources are trying to claim that his presence there means that it was BLM that was behind the...
Right. I'm sure a lot of listeners have heard a lot,
yes,
of that already. So that's still something that's emerging and coming out. And it's kind of not surprising because it fits with the narrative of the pro-Trump, the extremism right groups, that they will immediately change their narrative or change their reason and purpose for being somewhere, doing something. As soon as it's questioned too much or they don't think that it's a strong enough defense, they will alter it to suit.
One interesting thing, like aligned with what you're just saying, is when the thing in D.C. happened, that a lot of the individuals in the crowd were trying to scream at officers that they were Antifa. This was actually also seen in Salem back in December. And this is just kind of more of the regular alt-right, far-right rhetoric around the whole Antifa. I don't know why it's so prolific, but like there's been some statements that people are starting to believe that Antifa or BLM were solely behind the January 6th thing in D.C.
So, I mean, as far as police go in the D.C. insurrection, there have been a number of them, of police, like I said, looked into. There were two Capitol Police officers suspended, and there was one arrested because of investigations that they were cooperating with the mob. And that's something that I think video footage does show at times. There's a number of officers that... It didn't seem like they retreated for a tactical reason. They simply didn't mind if people went past them. They didn't care. And they weren't doing their job in that moment. And those are raising questions of concern. There was also an interview that had to do with an officer saying that he saw badges being flashed at him from the crowd. This was a Capitol Police officer who's on duty that day who was trying to defend the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. He said that it was overwhelming and that it brought him to tears at the end of the day, that he couldn't believe that this was the United States of America that he was living in today. He couldn't believe that the people in his department would support, you know, the same groups or people or politicians that this mob supports and idolizes, puts on a pedestal and reveres. And that's a scary thing in itself. That's something,
yeah,
that I've noticed among these patriot type groups, is they tend to idolize certain individuals. They put them on a pedestal, and those individuals are beyond reproach. And anyone who questions something related to that individual, their authority, their power, their wisdom or status, those those people get vilified. They get labeled as non or other. They get recently labeled as Antifa, or they get labeled as communist or Marxist.
Or BLM.
Or un-American.
Yeah.
And this doesn't matter if the individual that is questioning these things happens to be a politician, a former service member, or a former friend of theirs. If you question their ideology, they will lynch you, essentially. They'll social media lynch you. And then what I'm seeing from these groups now, that there's investigations happening, people are getting arrested. I mean, by January 8th, I think there were over 80 people already arrested. And it's been going on and on and on since. And people are very concerned right now. Those who are involved, they're more worried about getting caught. They're more worried about defending why they did it or trying to find a way to say that President Trump made me do it.
I think one aspect of this that was in there that needs to be explored too further is the fact that there was police officers in that crowd and what's going on with that.
The police officers flashing badges in the crowd is definitely a concern, and that's why we have so many departments looking into it.
And this is what's a major issue, is not many people realize that there are individuals of a far-right mentality that have ingrained themselves, embedded themselves deep within some of these police departments just so that they could sit there and perpetuate this kind of rhetoric, this kind of behavior amongst their other officers. And it's inculcated from the senior officers to the new trainees, the junior officers. It's passed on. It's not only like racist behavior, but it's also bigoted. It's also sexist. And a lot of the time, it's just ignored as being part of the whole cop culture.
When I think something, you're right, something to think about is the way that they share information and they pass it on when they group together. So when you have members of law enforcement who, when they're off duty, hang out with social groups like the Proud Boys, they are sharing information on how law enforcement thinks, on how they operate, on what they care about, what's worth their time, who will get caught or not, what kind of restrictions or punishments might be levied upon society by law enforcement. So they get an insight to that, and that's how these patriotic groups become dangerous. We've actually seen a small rise in militia-type groups over the last several years, especially since Trump took office in 2016. We've seen a lot of them.
Yeah, and this whole thing with the whole militia thing is leading up to the inauguration. Nearly every single state capital right now is boarded up with a fence around it.
Right. And the Boogaloo Boys is another one of these groups that is actually aiming for the end of the current era. Like they see major civil unrest and they just kind of want to nudge it along.
They want to trigger a second civil war.
They've been talking about massing up at capitals, at major points of interest, and pushing it along. And that's another element that's added to the safety concern here in the United States.
Yeah, and some of the results of this is like political reactions that are going way beyond. There's now stuff that's legislation that's going to put more restriction on what constitute a protest to what constitute a riot.
To be fair, that has been happening all summer.
It has.
We've been watching some cities having very reactionary responses saying that we want to limit who can protest, where you can protest, why you're protesting. And if you can remember, we sat down with journalist Justin Yao,
yes,
who actually came to cover the protests very early on from the first Monday here in Portland, Oregon. He had been in Hong Kong. That's exactly what he said. He said it reminded him of Hong Kong and that he was actually surprised that that could happen here in the United States. That was not something he could have ever anticipated, especially since United States discusses itself as being pro-democracy, pro-free speech, and that protesting is a protected right in our Constitution. Is it similar to other protests that you have covered before? Does this remind you?
Of Hong Kong, I'd say, and I'd never think that this would happen here, that level of police. You know, like, police suppressing protests in any way is the government trying to do a political thing via violence?
And during this time, I mean, the pandemic has been global. These protests haven't just been limited here to the U.S. these protests hit worldwide. There have been reactions not only in South America, over in Asia, in Europe. There have been protests everywhere.
There have been a lot of protests. Yeah, in almost every continent, there have been protests against oppressive governments. Things like in the Duterte, in the Philippines. We've got Bolsonaro's Brazil. There's a lot of things that have been happening over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yes.
That are changing the way that we see democracy and the way that we see civic participation. And when we see people trying to take control of a government by means of force or violence, you know, that is something the United States is not supposed to stand for. That is not something that we want here. But yet we're watching some people desiring this. Waving the American flag while mobbing into the nation's capital with the intent that if it goes down, they will join that party. If somebody fires a shot, they will too. That people are bringing not just zip ties, these are flex cuffs. These are specifically human restraint objects. People are bringing specific restraints that are made for that purpose. They are bringing weapons. They are hurting people. There was a woman that was killed, Ashley Babbitt, and something that I find tragic is that how she was a Trumper. She was a pro-Trump. She was a Q patriot by her own volition. It's all over social media. Whole community has disavowed her. They've abandoned her. They stopped talking about her. For a brief moment after she was shot in the Capitol, some people were saying, oh, she's a hero. And it was almost quickly quashed with rumors of she must be Antifa. And I think it had to do with optics. Some people within that movement realized it went a little too far too soon, that some people overexpose themselves, it's going to get everybody else caught, and that's not what they want. That's something that Boogaloo Boys have been talking about. Don't overexpose yourself. Go to the BLM protests and try to blend in. Try and nudge it along, see if you can get the police to attack the crowd, get them to escalate so that we can have the next civil war. And so these groups that we've been seeing come and protest against equity in our society, which is, you know, what the BLM protesters have been chanting about. We've been seeing them grow. We've seen them proliferate. We've seen the behavior. You and I have been at the forefront. We've been sprayed with the mace by people with the "Where We Go One, We Go All" spray painted on a homemade shield.
Yeah.
That they came with, not because they had been previously exposed to violence, like the BLM protesters brought shields in reaction to received violence. But these patriot groups brought them into Portland to specifically attack and defend against retaliation from that attack without previous provocation. And it's mind-boggling because we saw what they were capable of. With more organization, it could have been a lot scarier.
Yeah, one of the more interesting things about all this, too, is like a lot of the rhetoric coming from the far right, the backed blues, what have you, is that the leftists are the violent ones. And yet, every single time I have been at a protest here in Portland, it has never gotten to the extent of violence that it has when there are far-right counter-protesters that have shown up. Back in August, one of the best examples I can give was one of my most viewed videos on Twitter was me standing at 4th and Washington, and I had been standing where Trump supporters had been coming off of the bridge into downtown all afternoon long. And at one point, a lot of them just said, screw it, and they were just deciding they were just going to try and drive directly through the crowd and run people over.
Right, we were both down there. It was scary. Yes. I mean, I was watching this one pickup truck just nudging the people, just pushing through, and there was a police officer not taking action, not really trying to even call for backup, not really doing anything. Eventually some police did arrive. And who did they arrest? You remember that?
Yeah, the old dude.
They arrested a houseless man.
Yeah.
Who had wandered a little bit into the street.
And this dude was like somewhere in his 70s or 80s. 50s.
I thought it was at least 60, something like that.
No, he was older.
Was he?
Yeah, and it ended up being like he was literally crossing the road and that like one of the Trumpers was honking at him, and he literally started freaking out, like, screw you, and
all that.
He
was yelling back and all that.
He was slowly trying to get out of the road, and literally a white right squad showed up to arrest him, and only him. And not the Trumpers that were sitting there shooting paintballs and mace out their windows.
And that was right before they're shooting downtown. That was right, maybe within an hour or two, and that shooting took place. And we were there watching the whole caravan.
And this was actually one of the saddest things, too, because it started in Clackamas, where me and you had both started
following. Right, we went out to the Clackamas Mall to see them group up at the mall.
And we were watching them leave, and literally sheriffs sitting there holding up traffic to regular citizens for these Trump supporters to be able to leave for, what was that, like a half hour, 45 minutes?
More than that. And I was just thinking, all right, we got to get through this light, and then I'll have you meet me at the corner or something. But it never happened. We were there for well over an hour, hour and a half, just trying to get past that stretch in front of the mall. The one light that you're thinking of that comes out of the mall, I still have photos and maybe a video clip or two somewhere I took with my cell phone that day of the law enforcement in uniform assisting the Trump caravan exiting that parking lot.
Yep.
They blocked the lights. They stood in the middle of the road. I was shocked. You were out of my car at one point and I was recording this. I had to record it. I couldn't believe it.
It was hundreds.
So that Trump people could go. And I'm willing to say that I have looked at the rules regarding stopping traffic. You know, say if there's a marathon that's running through town, you've got those flaggers, the stop sign guys that are going to be like, hey, hold on, we got people running. Well, that's what you do for permitted parades and things like that. This is the position that officer was doing at that time. You can't hold the street for more than 15 minutes. Unless there's a real reason. If the officers were doing that for safety reasons, then what they should have done was follow the law and allow legal traffic on the road to continue passing and force those trying to continuously exit the parking lot in a giant Trump cavalcade. He should have stopped those individuals and forced them to use the traffic signals because they were in violation of that. And the police allowed it for so long. I was amazed. We had officers that were waving and smiling at the Trumpers as they were going by, as I'm sitting there. And this isn't just the one under the light. This is off to the side, a side street that I could see off on the other side of the road, right? A whole line of Trump cars between me and this officer, and I got to look through that, and I see a couple of vehicles parked so that nobody could make a right turn off of that road, right? But nobody could get onto the road either, and there's no real reason that they should have done that because when asked, that law enforcement agency actually said they did not help. And it was very, very frustrating for me.
And then from there, they went and hit the highway and cruised around for a little while. And they were supposed to just go right up to Vancouver. But at the last moment, they decided they wanted to go into downtown Portland.
One of the plans I remember being circulated was they're starting from the mall and they were going
to
go
to downtown,
a little on the highway, up on I-84 westbound. And a little bit to I-5 and then into downtown.
Yes.
Out of downtown and then back to I-5 north, right. Something like that.
Somebody,
and then somebody made it a loop and then that never happened.
And then somebody in the group, a leader or whatever, decided that they were going to change the plan to make it go directly to Vancouver.
Hey.
But about a midway through, they decided to deviate and go into downtown. And the moment a protest formed on the bridge to try and keep them from coming into downtown, a riot squad arrived and arrested the leftist protesters that were trying to keep them from going into downtown.
By the time we got to downtown, there was already a lot of Trumpers that were making it through. The entire bridge was completely blocked, and I already knew that coming in, so we took weird roads. You were like, where in the world are we going?
Yeah.
I drove you through a crazy route through town because I knew how bad it was going to be. And we parked not even in downtown. I wouldn't even let you because I didn't want to get identified. We walked across the bridge and saw the other bridge completely covered. To get that view was incredible.
While they were stopped there and the officers were arresting the leftist protesters, the other right-wingers took the chance and hopped out of their vehicles and used tape to cover up their license plates. So before they could enter into downtown, their license plates would not be able to be fully seen, not recorded, anything like that. There were so many instances of vehicular assault with weapons. There were individuals that were assaulted that day that were not even involved with the leftist counter-protest, whatever you want to call it, that were just citizens,
just bystanders in
bystanders going throughout their day that ended up getting shot with paintballs, getting projectiles thrown at them by these Trumpers.
People in businesses that are curious what's happening around their business come out from a block away, and now they're in the middle of it.
Multnomah County Sheriffs and Portland Police Bureau are complicit with allowing that all to happen. They are responsible for the shooting that occurred that night.
It
wouldn't have happened if they had done their job.
No, you're right. It wouldn't have happened if they had shown up. It wouldn't have been such a serious issue if they had made a presence. Let me say that again. If they had done their due diligence in recognizing that the people in this pro-Trump caravan were coming with intentions to possibly harm people or the willingness to harm people, they were coming with weapons. Even if it's a paintball gun, they're aiming it at people with the intent to harm. And that alone fulfills an obligation. They know that there have been threats made online. They have seen these people say things before. Independent journalists, as well as mainstream media, have been recording these people coming up to counter-protest and to supposedly back the blue, but these people are not even following the rules of law that they say are so important and that they require those they protest against to follow. By blocking the license plates, by pointing something at someone with an intent to aim. If I have a 5-pound book in my hand and I raise it behind my head, like I'm going to throw it at you with full force, that is legally classified as an intent to harm, right? That could still do damage with that intention behind it. And we didn't see law enforcement coming out to respond. That's a problem. When we had that whole big incident, I keep picturing the whole thing. I keep picturing the Portland artist painting down there, painting the scene and getting tear gassed away from his canvas. I keep picturing...
August 22nd.
I keep picturing the line of MAGA pro-Trump and QAnon warriors with their handmade weaponry and armor. And I keep picturing the BLM snack van getting attacked with journalists, with reporters, recording live on top, and their lives were in real danger.
I'm Robert Evans. I'm a conflict journalist. I've worked in Iraq and Syria and Ukraine and protests all over the United States. They assaulted a van. So just for no reason decided to destroy somebody's a van full of snacks. It was frustrating. It is one of those things where it's important to note that the police did nothing, because it's an important story in the saga of how bad the police here are at their jobs. Because, like, people complain that the police aren't there to protect them, and a bunch of violent fascists comes to town and assaults people. Some of them wave guns around and, like, are beating people and committing numerous felonies. Some of whom, at least one of whom, was out on an open warrant and was seen by police and allowed to show up. Tiny Tozy, yeah. Makes the case that the protesters are making, that, like, the police are not good at protecting people. That was the thing that we documented a lot of people who hadn't been fighting who got attacked, including myself. So I was walking up at one point to film a group of people beating each other up with sticks, and this right wing protester with a big blue shield that said "In God We Trust" ran up. And I was very clearly pressed. Like, I was not in the middle of a scrum. I wasn't, like, advancing with, you know, a shield wall or whatever. Like, I was on my own with nothing but a camera in my hand. It's a number of angles that make it clear. And he hits me right on the hand, breaks my finger, knocks my phone out. So I confront him. And, like, my hand's bleeding and I'm yelling at him. And then he proceeds to attempt to knock me to the ground. Like, he slams me with his shield. And I just kind of stand there and take it because I'm bigger than him. He just repeatedly assaulted me.
The amazement of all. And these are the same exact people. These are the same people that are traveling to other states. These are the same people that are showing up at state capitals. Some of these people were likely involved in January 6th issues. So I think if people haven't been willing to really look into what was going on over the summer, then now's the time.
And the incident you're referring to is actually August 22nd, which was exactly a week before the Trump caravan on August 29th. So there was well-known instances of violence and threats made online prior to the Trump caravan that these individuals were going to drive into downtown and they were going to hunt down and attack any leftist or any individual that they deemed to be BLM or Antifa.
You're right. And the response from that incident in downtown, you said the week before, their response after they went home, they were out there for a few hours and eventually, you know, they weren't. But they said that they were going to definitely do better next time. That they were not just out there to play.
Yeah.
The kind of behavior that they have saying that, you know, if it wasn't good enough this time, we're going to make it better next time. That attitude about it is something that's carried through every time those individuals hit the street in another demonstration. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that with armed people showing up, whether or not they were previously in the military or our police officer, is because those that were not part of these groups are getting training from those that were in those groups but are sharing the same ideology. They're sharing the need to change this society, to rewrite it as they see it, that it's going to be rewritten within their personal comfort zones, and that anybody who disagrees with that is to be labeled an enemy and taken out. And their claims for doing this is that they're being labeled an enemy by people who don't agree with them. And they're being taken out. And that they don't think that's right. So they're going to do the same thing to others somehow. They don't think that people with a grievance against a system should cause property damage. So they themselves are going out onto the street causing property damage. These patriots were crying online so loudly about how BLM protesters en masse were all terrorists. Because a handful of here or individuals there within a group would take extreme actions and there would be property damage, yep, or a rock or a water bottle got thrown. And they're saying, hey, life is sacred. You don't hurt people. You don't threaten life. You don't threaten property. You don't disrespect police officers. And these are the exact same people that came out and have been coming out ever since they said that, and have done the exact same thing they said was not acceptable. They have been abusing law enforcement. They're violating the law. They're breaking the law whenever possible. They're right now discussing destroying evidence if they were at the January 6th DC insurrection. There's, some social media inner chat channels that are discussing, hey, the word is out, and if you had a cell phone there, destroy it. Get rid of it now. And I'm thinking, how do these people not even understand that, like, if they can find your phone, they already know it's you, it's kind of too late. If they find out you literally got rid of it because you were worried they would find it,
you're more screwed.
You're more in trouble. That's going to cause more problems. Like, somehow they have the inability to step out of the ideology they've wrapped themselves in like a cozy blanket. And they're just sitting there binging on QAnon theories in their cozy Trump blanket, freaking out that everyone's going to come to get them. But the only time people are coming to get them is if they're threatening people's lives, attacking people, destroying property, and doing all the things that they are saying others shouldn't do. It's just mind-boggling. I know I keep talking in circles, but
the far right's really good at playing
victim. It's a really weird circular logic, which is to say it's non-logic.
No, it's literally, the far right is one of the best entities to play victim at. Literally, they'll sit there and be like, we're the good, sane people, and we're good Christians, and we believe in morals. But literally, they are the most vile, disgusting individuals that you can actually think of. And they're just sitting there just trying to play face.
Well, Christianity is about helping the poor. Then why are all the churches empty with houseless on the street?
Exactly. There's actually a few, and I will say this.
Why
there are a few so ministries and a few churches, but they are usually the community oriented.
Very local. They're hyper-local.
Hyper-local.
Hyper-local ones really care. You're right.
Religious centers, little churches and whatnot that are like, hey, guess what? This needs to be addressed. We're part of the community, and we care about the community more than we care about the perspectives or the cash or anything like that.
How that was a random change. How did we get onto that?
I don't know. But literally, there is a few places like the Central Nazarene Church on 97th and Powell that have done this. They've released property.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of stuff is the things you see coming from the leftist community.
Well, yeah, literally, you do. You see them caring about the community in St. John's for the last few years, right? Because the community up there has been seeking ways to address the unhoused community. They don't have the resources. There's not enough space. Individual camps have come and gone, and they're trying to claim their own space. Well, a project evolved, a houseless village up there.
Yep.
And I don't know if you caught this, Corey, that I was shocked to see a news article about how in the night, thousands of dollars of damage was done against these pods, and now they're going to have a late opening for that group. Because somebody decided to go and destroy that. And it makes you wonder, who is against helping the community? Why does helping those who have less than you or who live differently from you feel like harm? And how do you address that? Because it feels like that sort of sentimentality is something that these pro-Trump patriots seem to have. They're seriously worried that everyone's out to harm them, that others have something that they don't.
Now, one interesting aspect of all this, too, is a few of the people that I've been monitoring on the far right have actually spoken on the camps and are very opposed to them because they feel that they're going to bring crime and drugs and stuff like that to their neighborhood, more homeless. The St. John's situation is very interesting. I was following a few individuals out there in that neighborhood that were specifically talking down on the whole new village that was going to open and whatnot. The damage actually happened back in December, just before Christmas, I believe, or around Christmas time. And it was, somewhere around $6,000 to $8,000 worth of damage. It was mostly windows busted out and graffiti on buildings that were just brand new placed there. It delayed the opening, but they will be opening soon.
It seemed fresh. I was just absolutely shocked at that level of hate at somebody who doesn't have a roof over their head. And it makes me wonder, is the person damaging these things, do they have a nice home to go to? Do they know what that's like?
And midway through the protests, there was actually an individual that had recorded some footage at the homeless camps C-3PO over on the industrial east side here.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the individuals that was camped out there happened to have been an individual that was down at the protests. And the individual who was recording decided to label the camps Antifa HQ. And it resulted in far-right individuals for the next 3 to 4 weeks.
They were threatening the camp. They were
driving through, harassing people, throwing stuff out windows at the camp. God knows what. A few times it was obvious it was like a piss bottle or something like that. They were literally harassing a homeless camp because some far-right conspiracy theorist was sitting there and trying to attribute the camp to being linked to Antifa because one individual who had been at the protests was staying there because he was homeless, because he was down here from Seattle.
Right. No, I remember that. We went down there a couple of times and, you know, I spoke to a few individuals. I got a few interviews. You know, Vahid Brown was one of the ones I spoke to, and, you know, he's saying that, you know, this is just a place for people to get back on their feet. This has been in the works a long time, and that it actually, it hurts people when they have to be in another fear for their life moment from some outside source that doesn't even understand why this camp exists or how long it's been there, because they saw a quick tweet or whatever it was on social media. And that's, you know, something that's happened, I think, a lot of times. There's been people that were camping downtown overnight in the park, in the protest area. There were a lot of community groups that formed to actually take care of houseless community members. Those were all, you know, what are considered leftist or BLM-associated groups. So you are one of the frontline reporters that's been covering these protests. Speaking with Suzette Smith, independent or freelance journalist?
I am a freelance journalist. I used to be the arts editor of the Portland Mercury, but then when coronavirus pandemic happened and they laid everybody off, they laid me off too. And you can't expect a crowd of people protesting police brutality to back down in the face of police brutality.
You know, everything that's happening at night with the people that are out at night, how is that affecting the houseless community that you see in downtown since you're a resident of the area?
When Riot Ribs was more of an institution in the parks, it seemed like a very good thing for houseless people. Like, I have a clear memory of, like, walking down one of those sidewalks in Lowensdale Park and some guy being like, I've had a meal every day this week, just talking to his buddies with a sense of awe that someone was sort of taking care of him. And unfortunately, the Riot Ribs thing fell apart, and so it was an interesting thing because people were sleeping in the park, and some of those people were homeless to begin with, and they were able to, like, sort of create a sense of community there. And I'm definitely sad to see that no longer be present.
They often call themselves a block, right? Like, food block, snack block, stuff like that.
I'll run along with the joke of black block.
Right, yep.
Because everybody seems to think that a block is a bad thing. But it is not.
A block is another word for group, is my understanding.
Yep. And a lot of the time, a lot of the stuff that's going on with the left, a lot of the people on the right are just hyperbolizing. And it's really gross to watch. Hell, BLM is now being attributed to just being Antifa as well. Any group that is leftist that is at any of these protests, people on the right are just instantly labeling them as being Antifa, the ultimate evil. They're trying to destroy democracy. But literally, if you want to explore what is Antifa, it's anti-fascism. So if you're literally opposed to anti-fascism, what are you? A fascist.
Well, I think we were talking about this earlier. Anti cancel each other out. It's just like math, right? Two negatives make a positive, right? So if you're anti-fascist, that equals fascist.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Just clarifying.
I mean, this is like literally high school SAT level logic. Like, come on. Anti-fa. Okay. No antis. It's just fa. You're fascist. That's where you're at. If you're literally sitting there and describing some of this rhetoric coming from the far right as anti-Antifa, that rhetoric is fascist. Don't try and play it off as anything else. Don't try and be all fanciful. Because literally, if you are scared of saying that word, that means there is an issue within yourself.
So I think some people are confused about the word fascism. And just to clarify that, I thought I'd be cute and give you a little definition I just sort of looked up here on the internet. Dictionary of the English Language, the American Heritage Dictionary, 5th edition, defines fascism. First definition, noun, a system of government marked by centralization of authority under a dictator, a capitalist economy subject to stringent governmental controls, violent suppression of the opposition, and typically a policy of belligerent nationalism and racism. Second description is also a noun. It says, a political philosophy or movement based on or advocating such a system of government. So what's crazy is when you actually read off the definition.
You've got Trump, you've got the far right, and that fits the entire definition.
Right. We're not the only country that you could see elements of fascism having crept in, which is something scary. Even in the last half a decade, we've seen a few other countries fighting this concept. And, you know, we were taught in school that this already happened, you know, that Italy's Mussolini was handled, you know, nearly a century ago, and we shouldn't have to worry anymore. And here we are. When you read that definition, you see that we have somebody who's looking for supreme authority, who is looking for their supporters to violently suppress anyone with opposing ideology.
And their right. supporters willingly do so.
And right now, those supporters are screaming about a book called 1984 and all of that, and trying to co-opt some of the terms from that book. I don't think without understanding. I don't think they're understanding what that book is about, and the fact that, you know, in that book, the people, the society, have other issues like groupthink, you know, indoctrination and being brainwashed, in a sense, so that you can't speak out because you know what'll happen, so you learn to use different language and different words.
So one aspect that I don't think that has really been too explored too deeply into this is the fact that you are not, as an individual in America, usually led towards questioning what you've learned from the K-12 until you're in college and critically thinking. And one of the more interesting aspects of the far right is that they feel that the education system has been infiltrated by the left, and therefore are repelled by the fact of trying to seek a decent education through college or whatnot.
Or they don't have the means. They don't have the income. That's a big issue as well.
Yes.
That it's an elitist thing to go to college, and therefore it's leftist or Democratic side. And that's there not their ideology.
There are some individuals that will put themselves through college and have to sit there and have to keep their nose clean and try and keep themselves quiet to try and make it through it. They feel. But literally, there are teachers that will sit there and will accept that viewpoint as long as you properly support your argument, as opposed to a lot of the ways that a lot of far-right individuals
actually. I think college campuses have seen, you know, across the nation, these campuses have seen groups arise that are Trump groups or Patriot groups or young Republicans, things like that. They're massing around these ideologies in a way, and they're trying to do it in the way that appears like any other college campus social group. They're trying to just sort of mimic the other group's behaviors when they don't really believe in that empowerment in the same way. Like, they believe in group power. We saw that. They believe in mob rule. But they don't understand working together, finding compromise in that group activity.
One interesting group that I've seen that has been, like, catching my attention from the college level is actually Turning Point USA. These individuals are typically like people that are very conspiratorial, kind of far right, kind of QAnon. A lot of the ideas they're putting out there are along the lines of the far right. And they are actually heading up little like groups within some of the universities. I know University of Washington, I believe, has one, or Washington State University. I'm not sure which one of the two, but there's Turning Points. There's one down in University of Oregon. It's a group for some of these individuals that are more conservative-minded, possibly more conspiratorial in the way that they're thinking, and even call themselves free thinkers. PSU has a free thinker society, for instance, that are trying to explore that aspect of their rhetoric, but they are doing so to try and turn people's minds about where they are actually critically thinking and how they are actually critically thinking about these situations.
And in some cases, it seems like they don't want you to even question something.
That's what I mean by also the critical thinking has been sat there and stripped away by some of these far rights, and they'll actually call it free thinking. You'll hear free thinking as a terminology used by the far right, and critical thinking uses it.
I've heard truth seeker a lot, apparently. Truth seeker means whatever I believe to be true is true, is my understanding. That's what I glean from people who claim to be a truth seeker. They usually follow Alex Jones and QAnon chat boards. So that's how you know.
And it's very interesting because a lot of this rhetoric has just led into the January 6th. Right now, there's so many different things to try and keep up with in Washington. It's nearly impossible to try and sift through everything coming out.
It's been so hard to keep track of everything because, I mean, like I said, you've been slammed with school. I've had a lot of other things going on in my personal life. It's been a bit of a nightmare trying to transfer to WSU. Did not work for some reason. I'm still confused as to how my final transcript never got sent from PCC to WSU and why it took so long for them to accept a fax. You know, they wouldn't take it from a private fax machine, but I had to pay for a fax to be sent, and they magically took it. But then they wouldn't let me sign up for classes back in September. And they wouldn't let me register for classes here 2 months ago, back at the end of the fall term. So I'm kind of in this weird place where I'm trying to go to school, but I can't. And because of COVID, I can't go into an office and talk to somebody. Yeah. And it's, you get shuffled to whoever. It's very awkward trying to get a hold of one person, let alone the same person, and it being a person that has any authority to make anything happen. Because I was told to wait for the next term. Tried to sign up, and I can't. So I'm a little jealous of how busy you have been.
Yeah, and see, with me, I'm kind of stressed because I'm sitting here. This is actually my last year at PSU.
This is the hardest year.
This is the last two terms that I have. I will be graduating probably summer. And it's been very interesting trying to navigate going through registration, trying to figure out financial aid and all that in the midst of all this. Especially because I'm sitting here trying to, you know, maintain my career as a journalist. I know you are as well. Photographer, videographer, documentarian. There's so much to try and do. And there's just so much gloom doom scrolling is basically all I've been doing in my life right now, and I can't take myself away from the phone because, or Twitter or whatever, because
the
literally
moment you put it down, something happens.
The moment I put it down, something's going to happen. I've been wanting to try and get back out into the field and be reporting, but like every single moment that I'm not doing homework, I hop on the phone and something's going down.
Or you're sleeping.
Or I'm sleeping. And 2021 is gearing up to be 2022.2. I don't know. That's my
2020.2, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Oh, it's all right. The second version of 2020, but like on steroids?
Yes.
I had some unexpected personal family issues. So for the listeners, I'm sorry that it's taken so long. We had just kind of scrambled to get some equipment together to put up the last couple episodes where we spoke to some journalists that were covering the protests this summer. And then I had equipment breakdowns and the workarounds weren't working. And some personal and family issues arose, as well as the confusion over trying to figure out why I can't sign up for classes.
Yeah.
Happened over the fall. Next thing, elections. I got caught up into Twitter and just trying to follow along. Everything happened so quickly. Next thing I know, it's 2021. And you and I hadn't had a chance to sit down and talk for so long. So I'm so glad that I came over and we're here, able to relax, you know, in a nice, safe place during the COVID.
Yeah.
And record something. So thank you, everyone who was patient to wait for another episode.
And hang in there, folks. It's going to be over. It has to be over soon.
Well, what'll be over?
The pandemic. All this shit. The doom scrolling shall end.
The doom scrolling shall end. I don't know.
Hopefully it will. And some near day in the future, it should end. And hopefully we can just kind of walk outside, enjoy the sun, and get back to life.
For some reason, that just makes me think of the Monty Python. Dude, bring out your dead! Stephen King used that sort of reference in one of his movies in the 90s. It was a very apocalyptic, and it was somebody talking about, you know, bring out your dead, bring out your dead, you know. That's not where the pandemic is leading, but there are some serious concerns health-wise. There is a vaccine that, a couple of them actually, like the Moderna one, they have been out and about. We don't know how that's going to play out right now. We're not even positive exactly what's still available, because who is about to get the vaccine
is
changed a little bit. We've got teachers that should be getting it so they can open school districts, but you know, they don't know if they're going to have enough doses on time because they're still trying to give it to the senior centers and medical professionals.
And it was just mentioned, too, that the national stockpile that was supposedly there for the second dosage does not actually exist yet. It is still in manufacture. And there's nothing sitting in warehouses anywhere ready to distribute yet.
Which means that it kind of sounds like they put out the vaccine too early, or said that they could do too much too soon.
It got rushed by the Trump administration, all for political agenda purposes to try and keep face, whatnot.
We had to chat and relax. And thank you for bearing with us through the serious and the ridiculous.
As always, folks, this is Corey.
And this is Leslie. Thanks for being with us.
KBOO Portland.